Chapter 130. Desire T information. Apostrophe apostrophe desire T information. Apostrophe apostrophe said Mrs. Markleham, sinking on the sofa. I never had such a turn in all my life. Apostrophe, have you been to the study then, Mama? Apostrophe apostrophe asked Annie. Been to the study, my dear? Apostrophe apostrophe she returned emphatically. Indeed I have. I came upon the amiable creature, if you'll imagine my feelings, Miss Trotwood and David in the act of making his will. Apostrophe, her daughter looked round from the window quickly. In the act, my dear Annie, apostrophe repeated Mrs. Markleham, spreading the newspaper on her lap like a tablecloth, and patting her hands upon it, of making his last will and testament. The foresight and affection of the dear. I must tell you how it was. I really must, in justice to the darling, for he is nothing less. Tell you how it was. Perhaps you know, Miss Trotwood, that there is never a candle lighted in this house, until one's eyes are literally falling out of one's head with being stretched to read the paper. And that there is not a chair in this house, in which a paper can be what I call, read, except one in the study. This took me to the study, where I saw a light. I opened the door. In company with the dear doctor were two professional people, evidently connected with the law, and they were all three standing at the table. The darling doctor pen in hand. This simply expresses then, said the doctor Annie, my love, attend to the very words this simply expresses then, gentlemen, the confidence I have in Mrs. Strong, and gives her all unconditionally? One of the professional people replied, and gives her all unconditionally. Upon that, with the natural feelings of a mother, I said, good God, I beg your pardon. Fell over the doorstep, and came away through the little back passage where the pantry is. Apostrophe, Mrs. Strong opened the window, and went out into the veranda, where she stood leaning against a pillar. But now isn't it, Miss Trotwood, isn't it, David, invigorating, apostrophe said Mrs. Markleham, mechanically following her with her eyes, to find a man at Dr. Strong's time of life, with the strength of mind, to do this kind of thing? It only shows how right I was. I said to Annie, when Dr. Strong paid a very flattering visit to myself, and made her the subject of a declaration and an offer, I said, my dear, there is no doubt whatever, in my opinion, with reference to a suitable provision for you, that Dr. Strong will do more than he binds himself to do. Apostrophe, here the bell rang, and we heard the sound of the visitor's feet as they went out. It's all over, no doubt, apostrophe said the old soldier, after listening, the dear creature assigned, sealed, and delivered, and his mind's at rest. Well, it may be. What a mind. Annie, my love, I am going to the study with my paper, for I am a poor creature without news. Miss Trotwood, David, pray come and see the doctor. Apostrophe, I was conscious of Mr. Dick standing in the shadow of the room, shutting up his knife, when we accompanied her to the study, and of my aunt's rubbing her nose violently, by the way, as a mild vent for her intolerance of our military friend. But who got first into the study, or how Mrs. Markleham settled herself in a moment in her easy chair, or how my aunt and I came to be left together near the door unless her eyes were quicker than mine, and she held me back, I have forgotten, if I ever knew. But this I know, that we saw the doctor, before he saw us, sitting at his table, among the folio volumes in which he delighted, resting his head calmly on his hand. That, in the same moment, we saw Mrs. Strong glide in, pale and trembling. That Mr. Dick supported her on his arm. That he laid his other hand upon the doctor's arm, causing him to look up with an abstracted air. That, as the doctor moved his head, his wife dropped down on one knee at his feet, and, with her hands imploringly lifted, fixed upon his face the memorable look I had never forgotten. That at this sight Mrs. Markleham dropped the newspaper, and stared more like a figurehead intended for a ship, to be called the astonishment, than anything else I can think of. The gentleness of the doctor's manner and surprise, the dignity that mingled with the supplicating attitude of his wife, the amiable concern of Mr. Dick, and the earnestness with which my aunt said to herself, "That man mad!" Triumphantly expressive of the misery from which she had saved him, I see and hear, rather than remember, as I write about it. Doctor. Said Mr. Dick. What is it that's amiss? Look here. Annie. Cried the doctor. Not at my feet, my dear. Yes. She said. I beg and pray that no one will leave the room. Oh, my husband and father, break this long silence. Let us both know what it is that has come between us. Mrs. Markleham, by this time recovering the power of speech, and seeming to swell with family pride and motherly indignation, here exclaimed, Annie, get up immediately, and don't disgrace everybody belonging to you, by humbling yourself like that, unless you wish to see me go out of my mind on the spot. Mama. Returned Annie. Waste no words on me, for my appeal is to my husband, and even you are nothing here. Nothing. Exclaimed Mrs. Markleham. Me, nothing. The child has taken leave of her senses. Please to get me a glass of water. I was too attentive to the doctor and his wife, to give any heed to this request, and it made no impression on anybody else. So Mrs. Markleham panted, stared, and fanned herself. Annie, said the doctor, tenderly taking her in his hands. My dear, if any unavoidable change has come, in the sequence of time, upon our married life, you are not to blame. The fault is mine, and only mine. There is no change in my affection, admiration, and respect. I wish to make you happy. I truly love and honor you. Rise, Annie, pray. But she did not rise. After looking at him for a little while, she sank down closer to him, laid her arm across his knee, and dropping her head upon it, said, If I have any friend here, who can speak one word for me, or for my husband in this matter, if I have any friend here, who can give a voice to any suspicion, that my heart has sometimes whispered to me, if I have any friend here, who honors my husband, or has ever cared for me, and has anything within his knowledge, no matter what it is, that may help to mediate between us, I implore that friend to speak. There was a profound silence. After a few moments of painful hesitation, I broke the silence. Mrs. Strong, I said, there is something within my knowledge, which I have been earnestly entreated by Dr. Strong to conceal, and have concealed until tonight. But, I believe the time has come when it would be mistaken faith and delicacy to conceal it any longer, and when your appeal absolves me from his injunction. She turned her face towards me for a moment, and I knew that I was right. I could not have resisted its entreaty, if the assurance that it gave me had been less convincing. Our future peace, she said, may be in your hands. I trust it confidently to your not suppressing anything. I know beforehand that nothing you, or anyone, can tell me, will show my husband's noble heart in any other light than one. Howsoever it may seem to you to touch me, disregard that. I will speak for myself, before him, and before God afterwards. Thus earnestly besought, I made no reference to the doctor for his permission, but, without any other compromise of the truth than a little softening of the coarseness of Uriah Heep, related plainly what had passed in that same room that night. The staring of Mrs. Markleham during the whole narration, and the shrill, sharp interjections with which she occasionally interrupted it, defy description. When I had finished, Annie remained, for some few moments, silent, with her head bent down, as I have described. Then, she took the doctor's hand, he was sitting in the same attitude as when we had entered the room, and pressed it to her breast, and kissed it. Mr. Dick softly raised her, and she stood, when she began to speak, leaning on him, and looking down upon her husband from whom she never turned her eyes. All that has ever been in my mind, since I was married, apostrophe she said in a low, submissive, tender voice, I will lay bare before you. I could not live, and have one reservation, knowing what I know now. Apostrophe, nay, Annie, apostrophe said the doctor, mildly, I have never doubted you, my child. There is no need, indeed there is no need, my dear. Apostrophe, there is great need, apostrophe she answered, in the same way, that I should open my whole heart before the soul of generosity and truth, whom, year by year, and day by day, I have loved, and venerated more and more, as heaven knows. Apostrophe, apostrophe, really, apostrophe interrupted Mrs. Markleham, if I have any discretion at all, apostrophe, which you haven't, you marplet, apostrophe observed my aunt, in an indignant whisper. I must be permitted to observe, that it cannot be requisite to enter into these details. Apostrophe, no one but my husband can judge of that, Mama, apostrophe said Annie without removing her eyes from his face, and he will hear me. If I say anything to give you pain, Mama, forgive me. I have borne pain first, often and long, myself. Apostrophe, upon my word. Apostrophe, apostrophe gasped Mrs. Markleham. When I was very young, apostrophe said Annie, quite a little child, my first associations with knowledge of any kind, were inseparable from a patient friend and teacher, the friend of my dead father who was always dear to me. I can remember nothing that I know, without remembering him. He stored my mind with its first treasures, and stamped his character upon them all. They never could have been, I think, as good as they have been to me, if I had taken them from any other hands. Apostrophe, makes her mother nothing. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mrs. Markleham. Not so, Mama, apostrophe, said Annie, but I make him what he was. I must do that. As I grew up, he occupied the same place still. I was proud of his interest. Deeply, fondly, gratefully attached to him. I looked up to him, I can hardly describe how, as a father, as a guide, as one whose praise was different from all other praise, as one in whom I could have trusted and confided, if I had doubted all the world. You know, Mama, how young and inexperienced I was, when you presented him before me, of a sudden, as a lover. Apostrophe, I have mentioned the fact, 50 times at least, to everybody here. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Markleham.
Then hold your tongue, for the Lord's sake, and don't mention it any more. Apostrophe, apostrophe, muttered my aunt.
It was so great a change. So great a loss, I felt it, at first, apostrophe, said Annie, still preserving the same look and tone, that I was agitated and distressed. I was but a girl. And when so great a change came in the character in which I had so long looked up to him, I think I was sorry. But nothing could have made him what he used to be again, and I was proud that he should think me so worthy, and we were married. Apostrophe, apostrophe at St. Alphage, Canterbury, apostrophe observed Mrs. Markleham.
Confound the woman. Apostrophe, apostrophe said my aunt, she won't be quiet. Apostrophe,
I never thought, apostrophe proceeded Annie, with a heightened color, of any worldly gain, that my husband would bring to me. My young heart had no room in its homage for any such poor reference. Mama, forgive me when I say, that it was you who first presented to my mind the thought, that anyone could wrong me, and wrong him, by such a cruel suspicion. Apostrophe,
me.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Markleham.
Ah, you, to be sure. Apostrophe observed my aunt, and you can't fan it away, my military friend. Apostrophe, apostrophe,
it was the first unhappiness of my new life, apostrophe said Annie. It was the first occasion of every unhappy moment I have known. These moments have been more, of late, than I can count. but not my generous husband, not for the reason you suppose, for in my heart there is not a thought, a recollection, or a hope, that any power could separate from you. ' She raised her eyes, and clasped her hands, and looked as beautiful and true, I thought, as any spirit. The doctor looked on her, henceforth, as steadfastly as she on him. Mama is blameless, she went on, of having ever urged you for herself, and she is blameless in intention every way, I am sure, but when I saw how many importunate claims were pressed upon you in my name, how you were traded on in my name, how generous you were, and how Mr. Wickfield, who had your welfare very much at heart, resented it, the first sense of my exposure to the mean suspicion, that my tenderness was bought and sold to you, of all men on earth, fell upon me like unmerited disgrace, in which I forced you to participate. I cannot tell you what it was. Mama cannot imagine what it was to have this dread and trouble always on my mind, yet know in my own soul that on my marriage day I crowned the love and honor of my life. A specimen of the thanks one gets, cried Mrs. Markleham, in tears, for taking care of one's family. I wish I was a Turk.
I wish you were, with all my heart and in your native country. Said my aunt.
It was at that time that Mama was most solicitous about my cousin Maldon. I had liked him. She spoke softly, but without any hesitation. Very much. We had been little lovers once. If circumstances had not happened otherwise, I might have come to persuade myself that I really loved him, and might have married him, and been most wretched. There can be no disparity in marriage like unsuitability of mind and purpose. I pondered on those words, even while I was studiously attending to what followed, as if they had some particular interest, or some strange application, that I could not divine. There can be no disparity in marriage like unsuitability of mind and purpose.
There is nothing, said Annie, that we have in common.
I have long found that there is nothing. If I were thankful to my husband for no more, instead of for so much, I should be thankful to him for having saved me from the first mistaken impulse of my undisciplined heart. She stood quite still before the doctor, and spoke with an earnestness that thrilled me. Yet her voice was just as quiet as before. When he was waiting to be the object of your munificence, so freely bestowed for my sake, and when I was unhappy in the mercenary shape I was made to wear, I thought it would have become him better to have worked his own way on. I thought that, if I had been he, I would have tried to do it, at the cost of almost any hardship. But I thought no worse of him, until the night of his Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.